This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Rebecca Ponzio, Puget Sound Policy Specialist for the Washington Environmental Council, and Casey Golden, Senior Policy Advisor for Climate Solutions and Board Chair for 350.org. Both Rebecca and Casey are also members of the Environmental Priorities Coalition, a network of over 20 leading environmental groups in Washington State. Rebecca Ponzio and Casey Golden are here today to tell us about priorities for environmental legislation in the 2015 Washington State Legislative Session, which begins on January the 12th. This year's priorities are Oil Transportation Safety Now and the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Oh, it's great to be on your show, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Environmental Priorities Coalition?
The Environmental Priorities Coalition, as you said, is a network of leading environmental organizations, about 20, who work together to focus on priorities in the Washington State Legislature to pass legislation for the environment. We typically have up to four priority pieces of legislation. This year, we are honing in on two.
Sometimes people ask us why there are so many environmental groups who seem to have overlapping missions, and there are some good reasons for that, but when it comes time to come to the legislature and really decide on getting a few big things done, we do kind of act as one to pool our power to do it.
Would you comment on the likely political environment for environmental legislation in the 2015 Washington State Legislative Session?
I'll say I'm not a pundit or a crystal ball gazer. We're here as advocates, and we're going to press the legislature to do their job. You know, there's clearly deep political divisions. The legislature's got a lot of other things on its mind. And I think too many kind of observers and participants, I think, in the political scene make excuses about why legislators don't do the people's business. And we're not too interested in those excuses. We've got a few priorities. We're not coming with a long laundry list, and we're serious about them, and we plan to win them.
I would just add that the two priorities are also governor request legislation. These are priorities of the people, priorities for Washington, and priorities that are getting more and more interest across citizens, across different sectors, across Washington. So we hope that the legislature takes these seriously because they really are priorities.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a really great point, Rebecca, and I'm glad you brought it up because I think, you know, people get cynical about our politics and our elected leadership. This governor is committed at his core to doing what's right on climate policy and to advancing the clean energy revolution and having Washington be a leader. He's been clear about that from day one, and he's going to press hard for it. And so having some really bold political leadership like that is an opportunity we don't get every day.
Would you elaborate on why the environmental community chose to focus on oil transportation safety and the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act for the 2015 session?
I can speak to the oil transportation piece. Last year, the urgency around oil transportation and the risks associated with oil transportation really came to the forefront. And there was a bill introduced last session that worked to address the risks and the threats to our communities and waterways associated with oil transportation. That worked in concert with more and more communities passing resolutions, people coming out raising their concerns about this issue. When the bill did not pass last year, the governor commissioned a study to better understand the changing dynamic of oil transportation. And that study informed the governor's request legislation that's being brought forward now in this session. And as an environmental community, given the urgency, given the level of risk associated with oil transportation, we really felt like this needed to be a high priority of the environmental community.
You know, in some ways, these priorities chose us more than we chose them. I can assure you that dealing with oil train safety and dealing with oil trains at all in Washington State is something new, and it certainly wasn't our idea, but we're pretty committed to doing something about it. And, you know, in a bigger sense, the same is true with climate change. I wish I could sit here today and tell you that our priority bill was the second to last chapter of the clean energy revolution, but unfortunately, you know, we're starting a little earlier than that. The good news is we actually have done a lot in Washington State and around the world to advance this clean energy revolution. But if we're going to win it and win it at the scale that we need to preserve a livable future for ourselves and our kids, then we're really going to have to advance the ball with a systematic, aggressive climate policy that commits us to the cause and gives us the tools to win it. And that's what the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act will do.
Let's focus now on the oil transportation safety priority. What protections are currently in place to prevent oil spills in Washington State?
The protections we have in place right now are based in the 1970s, and they're mainly focused in the maritime area, and they really do not address the changing dynamic of oil transportation now. They don't address the types of oil that's coming into Washington State, and they don't address how oil is coming in. They don't take into account the fact that oil is being transported over rail. They don't take into account that the way that oil is transiting our waterways is more and more via barges as well as oil tankers. So although we do have some systems in place, and those are very important systems to grow from, we really need to evolve them in order to address the threats and the risks that we are seeing right now.
What would be the consequences of a major oil spill in Washington State?
Oh, man. Well, we've seen what the consequences are elsewhere. We've seen Exxon Valdez. We've seen the Lac Mégantic disaster in July 2013 in Quebec, where an oil train exploded into the middle of the town and killed 47 people, and it's still devastating the infrastructure and the lake right there. We've seen what's happened at the Kalamazoo River with tar sands and the pipeline spill there, that it has taken millions and millions of dollars to clean that up, and the tar sands still, to some degree, exist in the river. So we have a lot of unfortunate examples of what is at risk, both for the health of our waterways, for Puget Sound, as well as the safety of our communities.
What are the key elements of the Oil Transportation Safety Act that is being considered?
There are really four key components to that piece of legislation. The first piece is establishing a publicly accessible system that provides information on the type of oil, the route that the oil is taking, how much oil is coming through our communities. It also provides information in a consolidated form about other parts of oil transportation, like oil spills. The second important piece is around updating our laws around spill prevention. So that's both over our waterways as well as updating infrastructure, like our rail infrastructure. The third piece is around putting in place financial protections to ensure that the companies that are bringing oil into Washington are held responsible if a spill happens, not taxpayers. And the last big piece is how to pay for all these new programs and systems, and that's expanding what's called the barrel tax, which pays for the current regulations and infrastructure that we have in Washington State. It's expanding it to include rail, include pipelines, and it's also increasing the amount of money that will be available, since we really need an overhaul of our system in order to protect as well as respond and address any oil spill.
In addition to the Environmental Priorities Coalition, who is for the Oil Transportation Safety Act?
Well, it's a governor request piece of legislation, so the governor is leading this effort. We also have strong support in the House Democrats. And last year, when the bill was being discussed in session, Senator Rolfes was the sponsor for the Senate, and Representative Farrell was the sponsor in the House. So we really have pretty strong support. We also know from last year's experience that there's bipartisan support in this issue. There were bipartisan votes to pass the bill last year. So we have a sense that this is an issue that legislators, as well as communities across Washington, I'm talking agricultural communities, shellfish communities, the public health communities, they're all interested in this issue because it impacts everyone. So it's really a bipartisan effort.
Who is against the Oil Transportation Safety Act?
I think there's universal understanding and concern about this issue. what we're going to deal with during session is an interpretation of how to deal with it. And as Casey mentioned earlier, we have a split legislature. We have Republicans dominate the Senate, Democrats dominate the House and the governor's office. So it'll be an interesting session around interpreting what really we need to get done. The governor has put a line in the sand of what is needed, and a really important piece of that is public disclosure, the publicly accessible information. So I think that's, you know, he's putting forth a bold action, a bold set of elements to his bill to move forward.
So in your view, what are the chances the Oil Transportation Safety Act will pass?
It's really hard to tell. I hope the legislature is listening to citizens across Washington who are passing resolutions, who are raising concerns about this issue, who are wanting publicly accessible information about oil transportation. So that's the beginning of session, is people want change, people want bold action.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Rebecca Ponzio of the Washington Environmental Council and Casey Golden of Climate Solutions. Our topic is environmental priorities for the 2015 Washington State Legislative Session, which are Oil Transportation Safety and the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Let's talk now about the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act that's being proposed by Governor Inslee. How well has Washington State done so far in reducing the carbon emissions that lead to climate change?
Well, you know, you can wake up on either side of that bed, Diane. We've made a lot of progress compared to a lot of other places. We have a lot to show for ourselves. For your listeners who are powering their devices with electricity from Seattle City Light, which I know is not all of them, you're using 100% carbon-free electricity, the first major urban area to do that. We've had a lot of advances in vehicle efficiency, in clean fuels, in renewable energy. And with respect to what we need to do to respond to the climate crisis, it's not nearly enough. So we live in sort of that gap between the fact that we're making progress and we know progress is possible, and the fact that we have to accelerate the progress in the right direction. And critically, we have to stop taking big steps in the wrong direction, which is part of what the Oil Safety Act is. The Rail Safety Act is, you know, we're seeing a lot of new oil supply being developed. That oil has to stay in the ground. Even under the best circumstances, if everything goes right and there's never an accident, and that doesn't happen, of course, the carbon still ends up in the atmosphere, and then it ends up in the ocean, acidifying the oceans and causing climate change. So we need to make this transition more aggressively. We need to stop taking steps in the wrong direction, and we need to accelerate our progress.
What programs does Washington State currently have in place to address climate change?
Well, you know, we passed a law in 2008, the Climate Action and Green Jobs Bill. The legislature passed that, which has a schedule for reducing our carbon pollution between now and 2050 as a state. The legislation does not include strong mechanisms for enforcing and holding polluters accountable to the achievement of those goals, which is why we are now before the legislature with the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act to test the proposition of when they said in 2008 that they would observe the science-based schedule for reducing our emissions, did they mean it or was it just a gesture? And it's important that we have that test now. This legislation would produce real legal accountability for doing what the science says we got to do.
What are the key elements of the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act?
You know, climate is big, but it's not really all that complicated. You know, fundamentally, it's about too much carbon in the atmosphere. And the solution to that is, not to put too fine a point on it, a clean energy revolution. We have to make the transition from the fossil fuel age to the clean energy age. As I said, there are some encouraging signs, especially in this part of the world, that that transition is gaining momentum and it's possible, but it's being held back. It's being suppressed by a terrible public policy problem. And that problem is that we continue to subsidize fossil fuels in a whole variety of ways, but probably the biggest and most important way is that we all pay the costs of climate change, of carbon emissions, of reducing snowpack, of ocean acidification. 2 million people are paying the price in the Philippines right now from their second consecutive super typhoon. These are real costs and people pay them. And in a way, you know, if you think about it, it's a subsidy to the fossil fuel industry. We're allowing them to dump their waste product into the atmosphere for free in unlimited quantities, and we all pay the price. So the simple solution to that is the core of the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act. It puts firm limits on the amount of carbon pollution that can go in the atmosphere, limits that are derived from what the scientists tell us about how much we have to reduce. And it puts a price on the emissions that are allowed to go into the atmosphere in the meantime. And there are a whole lot of things that we're all doing to advance the clean energy revolution, from bikes to solar energy to renewable power to better transit systems. But all those things have to sail into an unfair economic headwind because we continue to subsidize these carbon emissions. We think that when you put a firm legal limit on carbon emissions, and when you stop subsidizing them, when you make polluters pay for them, everything else we're doing to advance the clean energy revolution works a lot better and costs a lot less.
Which sectors are covered by the Act?
All the major carbon-producing sectors, which kind of boil down to transportation in our state is about half the problem. It's a bigger percentage here because we have relatively low carbon electricity, both from our hydropower system and from our more recent investments in new renewables and energy efficiency. We still have a lot of carbon to take out of our energy supply. That's about 15 to 20% of it. Industrial emissions are about 15 to 20% of it. And so those are kind of the big categories.
Would you go into a bit more detail about how the program would actually work?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It says, we know that the problem is too much carbon in the atmosphere. So using our best scientific information, what's the right amount? What's the pace at which we need to reduce? That becomes a legal limit. And the state issues permits to emit up to that limit. And then the permit holders and the people who want the right to emit need to pay for that right. Those revenues are then returned to the state and then recycled to the people in various ways. In the current formula that the governor has put forward, the priorities are, our priority is first and foremost equity. Everyone should be able to afford basic energy service, and so some of the revenues would go into funding a working families tax credit for anybody who qualifies for the federal earned income tax credit. Some of the revenues would go into clean transportation options because, after all, the point of a carbon price isn't to pay it, it's to avoid it by reducing our dependence on fossil fuels over time. Some of it would go to energy efficiency. Some of it would go to solving the state's education funding crisis. It'd generate about $1 billion in revenue that then gets returned to the people in the form of either tax rebates like the working family tax incentive or critical investments that the legislature needs to figure out how to fund.
Who will end up paying to pollute? Which companies?
There's 130 companies that would need to hold permits in total. Anybody that emits more than 25,000 tons of carbon pollution in a given year. It's the fuel suppliers. The best way to do a policy like this is to sort of go as upstream as possible. Really, ultimately, this isn't about electricity per se. It's not about transportation per se. It's about fossil fuels. It's about oil, and it's about coal, and it's about gas. And so we go as far upstream in the chain of transactions that bring those fossil fuels into the state, and that's where the permit holders are. So it's fuel distributors. It's the utilities that import coal-fired power into the state or use power from the one remaining coal plant in the state or gas-fired power. It's from the large industrial emitters who use large amounts of natural gas.
How much will the polluters pay?
The system is based on an auction. So the right to pollute up to that limit would be auctioned off. So that price is a price that's set at auction. Right now, one of the options in the way the bill is constructed is we would participate in the auction system that's now running in California and Quebec, which makes a lot of sense because the bigger the system is, the more efficiently it operates. And permits there now are going for about $12 a ton.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Rebecca Ponzio of the Washington Environmental Council and Casey Golden of Climate Solutions. Our topic is environmental priorities for the 2015 Washington State Legislative Session, which are Oil Transportation Safety and the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act. What do you consider the strongest or most positive parts of the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act?
The first and foremost thing you got to say about it is, as a people, as a civilization, as a country, as a state, we have not fully made the commitment to tackle the climate crisis. And what this says in a very clear and specific and numerical legal way is we will do this. We know how much carbon pollution is too much, and we're going to limit pollution to that level. That's an important thing legally. It's an important thing economically. But I think, you know, in a way, it's an important thing sort of psychologically for all of us to say we have the tools at hand, we understand the problem, and we're going to commit ourselves to the solution. So it puts that stake in the ground that says we are committed to do what's right and necessary to tackle climate change. I think that's vitally important. It expresses that commitment in the form of a legally enforceable act of law. And law, after all, is how we collectively make commitments and figure out how we stick to them. And putting the force of law behind that commitment, I think, is the foundation of all good climate policy. And then finally, it says by saying that A, you can't have unlimited emissions, and B, you can't emit anything for free, it starts to get the economic incentives blowing wind in the sails of the clean energy revolution instead of blowing a headwind against the clean energy revolution. Now, anyone who wants to save more energy in their home, anybody who wants to start a business in solar energy, anybody who wants to invest in the efficiency of their factory or their commercial building is going to get the right economic signal that says the more energy you save, the less fossil fuels you use, the greater the economic reward. And that's what really helps the economy start to drive this clean energy revolution.
What could be improved in the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act?
The limits that were set in 2008 are not based on the best available science now. The limits ultimately need to be stronger. We can start where they are, but we need to keep our eye on the ball of what the science tells us because you can't negotiate with physics. So ultimately, the limits are going to need to be stronger. There's sort of a trade-off in a bill like this between making sure there's enough flexibility. This is a big transition. We're making a tectonic change in our economy from a fossil fuel-based economy to a clean energy economy. We have the tools to know that we can do it, but it's important to understand that whenever you make a transition, it's not easy for everybody. And so there's some accommodations in the law to make sure that everybody has a fair shot at making the transition. Sometimes that can make the law a little bit more complicated, and we think it's really important to keep it simple and clear and legally enforceable. So that trade-off between simplicity and making sure that we can make the transition in a real fair way that doesn't impose any unnecessary hardships on anyone is a bit of a trade-off.
How much support does there seem to be for Governor Inslee's cap-and-trade proposal?
It's interesting to watch it evolve because it's a strong proposal. It was developed with the consultation of a carbon emission reduction task force that I sat on, but that also included very strong representation from business, from organized labor, from social justice and environmental justice communities, from the health community. All of those communities are now working to advance the bill. And so it does have quite broad-based and growing support. It is a bold initiative, and it's always interesting to see at the early phases, the legislature hasn't convened yet, how people position and whether people are really ready to sign on for the kind of big, bold change we need.
Who is against the proposal?
The fossil fuel industry. You know, it's important to say there may be other businesses who feel that they are unavoidably exposed to fossil fuels, like they just don't have good alternatives, and anything that potentially raises the cost of gas and oil may be a problem for their business. And I fully understand that. But I think it's really important for us as citizens to recognize that all of us are going to be better off, including the business community, when we systematically reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, reduce our exposure to this dangerous climate change, and start running our economy on energy resources that we can control and produce ourselves. So I understand that during the transition, there may be some other businesses opposed, but really, at the end of the day, this is about the fossil fuel industry against the people.
In your view, how likely is it that the Carbon Pollution Accountability Act will pass in the 2015 Washington State legislative session?
I decline to be an odds maker at the beginning of the show, and I decline again. Diane, I think there's a lot of sort of talking heads about how politics works and about how legislators work, and people like to sort of show off about how smart they are about the inside game. And I got to tell you, I think more and more that's all about self-fulfilling prophecy and the egos of the pundits. I don't think anybody knows. I think we have to fight as hard as we can for what's right. The people are clearly behind this bill. The polling overwhelmingly supports action on climate change. There are ways to do it that are clearly positive for the economy, that create good jobs, that address our social and economic justice needs. There's going to be a big constituency that fights for this thing. And if the legislature doesn't pass it, then they're failing to do their job on behalf of the people of Washington. And by the way, Diana, I should say, you know, we're going to do everything we can to get our democratic institutions to really engage and work this issue. If they fail to, we're not going to stop there. We're going to try everything we can in local governments, in ballot initiatives. This is an urgently important piece of business for the people of Washington, and we're going to find a way to get it done.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
The Oil Transportation Safety Bill and the Climate Bill are different parts of the same coin. And the Oil Transportation Safety Bill is really important and a high priority for the environmental community, but it doesn't ultimately solve our problem. It only addresses the risks of oil transportation right now. There are plans, there are proposals to increase the oil infrastructure in our state with new terminals that we are overwhelmingly opposed to. So putting side by side the oil transportation work that we need to do to update our outdated laws to make sure that our communities and waterways are safe is really important, to think about that side by side with the carbon solutions and addressing climate change. So we need to think about it together.
Really well said, Rebecca. It's really one fight. And, you know, in some ways, legislation gets complicated, the political dialogue gets complicated, but the basic fight is really not very complicated. There's a sort of narrative in our political culture these days that's a narrative of cynicism and futility, and the legislatures are all bought off, and they're never going to get anything done, and it's a divided government, and so all they're going to do is fight. And I'm not saying there's no truth to that narrative. I'm just saying, as a citizen, repeating and buying into that narrative doesn't serve us very well. Whatever our political and elected leaders do, and whatever the dysfunctions of our political system, we have the fight of our lives on our hand, literally a fight for the future habitability of the planet. And at the end of the day, it's a fight of the people against the fossil fuel industries. And I think if we think about it that way and we go out there and fight it for all it's worth, I think eventually our elected leaders and our political institutions are going to have to come around. But we have to fight it like we mean it. We got to believe in it. You know, especially I appreciate you having this show to talk about what happens in the legislative session. And ultimately, those institutions, what they do is super important. But in terms of where the real energy and leadership and passion and drive and kind of the motor for this clean energy revolution is going to come from, it's going to come from your listeners. It's going to come from fighting in the legislature when we need to fight in the legislature, and getting out in the street when we need to get out in the street, and insisting that this gets done because we have no other option. And I guess what I would leave people with is, let's not sit around telling ourselves stories of sort of moping about how decrepit our political institutions are. Let's get out there and make them do the right thing.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks,
Diane.
You were just listening to Rebecca Ponzio, Puget Sound Policy Specialist for the Washington Environmental Council, and Casey Golden, Senior Policy Advisor for Climate Solutions. For more information, check on the web at wecprotects.org and climatesolutions.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on Listener Power at 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.